This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The serious stuff, of course, corporate news, the challenges of agriculture, and then how exactly one winds up buying something called a mani-pac online. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 18th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So what if there was a way for us to wrap up inflation and retail sales and consumer confidence and corporate expectations and the general vagaries of doing business in this economy into one reasonably neat and tidy, mostly easily digestible story? That'd be nice, right? Well, good thing for us then that S&P Global Market Intelligence is out with some new data. Corporate bankruptcy filings, S&P says, are on track this year to be the highest they have been in more than a decade. More than 230 companies filed for protection from their creditors between the beginning of the year and the end of April. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab gets us going with what it all might mean.
The story of the great bankruptcy boom of 2023 goes back more than a decade, when the federal borrowing rate was next to nothing. Kevin Kaiser, a finance professor at Wharton, says when interest rates are low,
more people take advantage of the more available credit to borrow money on good terms. People seem flush and everybody seems good about it.
Seems good, but quietly, companies in trouble are borrowing to cover debt, which is fine enough to get by until inflation.
And rates rise, access goes down, and some people default.
Kaiser says some bankruptcy churn is normal. This is corporate America, after all. And in corporate America, companies fail. What's unique about this group is that so-called consumer discretionary companies are leading filings. Jamie Katz, an analyst at Morningstar, says stores like David's Bridal, Party City, and Bed Bath & Beyond fell behind just as online shopping upended retail.
If you are not fast enough to convert your model to whatever the next big consumer trend is, you ultimately fall out of favor.
It's why retailers are less likely to make it out of bankruptcy, though most companies in other sectors do eventually recover. Jared Elias, who teaches corporate bankruptcy law at Harvard, thinks more companies will enter bankruptcy this year, and he's worried it'll cause a domino effect.
A company files, they don't pay people they owe money to, and then the people who don't get paid don't pay the people they owe money to.
And so on. Elias doesn't know how serious the problem is. It looks like it'll go one of two ways.
What we're seeing is a bunch of companies with problems, or you're seeing, you know, indicators that corporate America as a whole is having problems.
What's that Warren Buffett quote? You only learn who has been swimming naked when the tide goes out. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Yeah, I love that quote. All right, so that's what corporate bankruptcies might mean for this economy. What about default? June 1 fast approaches, the Treasury Department's official marker of when the X date might land. And default would be, very big picture, bad. Very bad. Exactly how bad it'd be for you, though, depends on where you are. Moody's guesses that 500,000 jobs would be lost just in Texas, the second biggest economy in this country. So we asked Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall, who files for us from Houston, how that might play out in the Lone Star State.
The first move economists say they expect if the U.S. government can't pay its bills is cuts to Social Security payments. Patrick Jankowski is with the pro-business Greater Houston Partnership.
There are 4.5 million Texans that are either getting a retirement payment, a disability payment, or some sort of survivor's income from that.
So more families would have to choose between paying for rent, meds, and groceries, says Tanya Treese with Houston nonprofit Baker Ripley.
We have some seniors that we serve right now that are already food insecure, and so that's going to be exacerbated.
After that, Rice University economist Zach Bethune says if the U.S. defaults, the impacts would ripple across financial markets.
Stock prices would fall. It'd make interest rates on mortgages and credit cards and auto loans increase. So it'd be hard, you know, more difficult to borrow. That would then, you know, kind of create a financial contagion, increase unemployment.
He says the dollar would also depreciate, though Bethune says there may be a tiny silver lining for Texas on that front, being a net exporter and all.
Our oil would be cheaper, our energy would be cheaper in other parts of the world. That may actually help Texas kind of withstand some of the brunt of a recession.
When I ask Bethune how he would characterize a default situation, a flat tire, car crash.
It would be where your check engine light comes on. There's certainly a problem. The longer you wait to actually check the engine, the whole car may go.
Even so, CEO of the Texas Association of Business, Glenn Hammer, says the consequences of a default are so bad, he's sure politicians will avoid it.
We've seen this movie before.
He says it's like his favorite film, Top Gun Maverick.
I sensed that things were going to come down at the end. I also sensed it would work out okay for Maverick and the good guys.
Things may look like they'll crash and burn, but Hammer says we'll still see a happy economic ending. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Thursday, there will not, it seems, be a debt limit freakout until there is. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. None of my business, I know, but what are you doing with your spare time lately? I ask because we learned from the Commerce Department this week that retail sales of sporting goods and hobby and instrument and bookstores were down 5.4% last month over a year ago. Garden equipment and supplies, down about 3.7%. So what do you suppose that means for the small businesses that rely on people to be really, really into fishing reels and board games and plant humidifiers? We sent Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes off to find out.
Today I learned that dice can have more than six sides.
Over here somewhere we've got a 30-sided die.
Lindsay Farrell works at Canton Games, a shop in Baltimore. She says they also have a few 100-sided dice.
But those don't really stop rolling, so they're not really essential.
And specialized dice can cost hundreds. Farrell says another big seller are Magic the Gathering cards, which she herself has refused to get into.
I've got other hobbies that suck out all of my spare money, you know?
Specifically, plants, which is actually what they sell a few blocks over at Kelly Gardens. Jason Ross is there, purchasing a green leafy plant for $30. And actually, he has some questions about those leaves.
I've got dogs at home that tend to maybe chew a thing or two. This isn't like a toxic type of plant for animals.
It would fall in the toxic. It's not going to kill you, though. I'm going to say that.
That's the store's owner, Chris Kelly. He's wearing a gray t-shirt that says Plant Guy. He opened the store in 2021 and knows he's competing with spending on pets and dinners out. But even with hobby spending down overall, real plant lovers can't stop.
I'm doing better this year than I did last year, so sounds like I'm on the right path.
Kelly also goes to people's homes and will repot and prune all those plants they bought at the start of the pandemic. And just down the street is another store that's over a century old. Tochterman's Fishing Tackle. When customers enter, they pass under two rows of fishing rods, positioned like an arch of sabers. One of the owners, Deanna Tochterman, is talking to a customer about how to use lugworms as live bait.
Keep them cold like a bloodworm. Treat them the same way like a bloodworm.
They're not so gross as a bloodworm. Do they drip?
They bite.
Do they bite?
The lugworms, which are twitching in the box, cost about $10. You can spend hundreds or even thousands on fishing gear like reels and rods. Tony Tochterman is a co-owner and Deanna's husband.
2 years ago was fantastic because you couldn't do anything else but fish.
He says that growth has slowed, but isn't worried, because once you get into fishing, there's always more you can buy. Tim Campbell, a sales associate, reads a sign on the bait fridge.
It says, "Give a man a fish and he has food for a day. Teach a man to fish and he has to buy bamboo rods, graphite reels, monofilament lines, neoprene.
You get the idea.
And six packs.
In Fells Point in Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
We've all had this happen, right? There you are, scrolling through social media, past the dog videos and the memes, and an ad pops up, and you think to yourself, yeah, I could use that. And before you know it, there's a click and a tap, and the thing is on its way. Matthew Pittman studies what happens between the, yeah, I could use that, and the click and the tap. He's an assistant professor of advertising at the University of Tennessee. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I need you to start by telling me the story of how you wound up buying personalized Lego figurines of yourself and your wife.
So it was certainly not on purpose. I can promise you that. I'm browsing social media.
Oops, did it just happen? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Scrolling through social media, as we all do, and I saw an ad. It wasn't the first time I got me. I think it was the second or third time, when each time I saw it, it seemed like progressively a better and better idea. I was like, you know what? My anniversary is coming up. My wife would love personalized Lego figurines of ourselves.
I'm sorry to laugh. That's an all-timer story, I got to tell you. But look, you are a trained professional, and yet you found yourself in the morass of advertising while on social media, and that while on social media thing is key here. What does it do to our brains while we scroll and try to make decisions?
With this, I noticed that the things that seemed like a good idea in the moment, then later when those things arrive in the mail or when you see an ad based on something you clicked on, there's a little tinge of regret. Like, why did I do that? Why am I seeing this right now? So I wanted to explore that phenomenon, figure out why we click the things we click.
Okay. It's a mystery of current life. Why do we click the things we click?
So part of the problem is that in the past, we've studied social media ads as if they're just like a billboard or mm-hmm. a print magazine ad or even a television ad, when they're not. It's dynamic. It's multimedia. It's changing. And you're seeing an ad from any number of sources right after you might see a video or a post from your ex from high school or a new celebrity training fitness routine. Evaluating all those different sources takes up mental resources. Mm-hmm. And so it depletes our ability to think reasonably, rationally about these things. And then when we see an ad for a Lego set or a mani pack, which is what I also purchased online, which is a fanny pack painted like a man's hairy belly. Oh, man. The third time we see an ad for that, we say, oh, it seems like a good idea. I'd probably find a use for that. Let me go ahead and buy it.
Okay. I want to come back to all of that stuff, but we'll do that at the end. I do have to ask, though. We see advertisements not just for mani packs on social media, but we mm-hmm. see, let's see, financial advertisements. We see political advertisements. We see all kinds of things that are of more import than you know, quick spur of the moment purchases.
Right. So one caveat of this research is it doesn't necessarily overpower all of our self-determination, okay. self-will, agency. When you're involved with the product, then you put forth the effort to rationally think about it, even if you're mentally depleted or have that kind of mental fog. So presumably, when you see an ad for an upcoming election, hopefully you're bringing your mental resources to bear and you're not as swayed as you are with kind of low involvement purchases like mani packs or personalized Legos.
So the obvious solutions journalism question here is, what are we supposed to do? And the answer probably is just take a beat. Don't act right away. Leave something in your shopping cart. But my guess would be that the immediacy of social media means that you don't actually take a beat and you act because it's right there and you're cognitively overloaded.
Right. So there's those little tactics we can use in the short term to help us. But long term, I think media literacy and being more deliberate with our media use is a helpful goal. And sometimes I can manage this, not all the time. But before I open up an app, I ask myself, what do I hope to accomplish with this 10 second or 10 minute TikTok session? If I'm looking for information, sports updates, whatever, setting those goals beforehand can help us align goals and motivations.
Yeah. Okay, so how did the figurines go over with your wife? That's what I want to know. Forget the mani pack, the figurines that were late for your anniversary. How'd that do?
The figurines, yeah, showing up 2 weeks late was already one strike against me because there was some built-up anticipation. But it did not live up to the anniversary hype that I had built it to be in my own mind.
Shocking. Matt Pittman, he's professor of advertising, also public relations at the University of Tennessee. Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Coming up.
Everyone's favorite flavor is vanilla.
Everyone's? I don't know about that. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 115 points, about 0.3%, 33,535. The NASDAQ gained 188 points, about 1.5% there, 12,688. The S&P 500 picked up 39 points, about 0.9%, 41.98. Walmart picked up 1.3% today on better than expected earnings and revenue in the fiscal first quarter. It also raised its guidance for the full year. Rival retailer Amazon grew 2.3%. Micron Technology moved up 4.1%. The company's planning to invest $3.7 billion in chip production in Japan. NVIDIA grew almost 5% today. The company said it expects better results from what it called, and this is a quote, the ongoing artificial intelligence gold rush. What could possibly go wrong? Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up 3.64%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The United States is the biggest pistachio producer on the planet. And 99%, give or take a decimal point or two, of that crop comes from California, more than a billion pounds. But pistachio growers, and in a sense the trees themselves, are having to come to terms with a changing climate. Marketplace's Lily Jamali went up to the Central Valley city of Firebaugh, California.
Stephen and Clisha Bertram's ranch house looks out onto the couple's pistachio orchard. Clisha says her dad, Larry Gage, bought this land around 25 years ago.
When he first planted the pistachio trees here, they called him a stick farmer because it just looked like he'd planted a bunch of sticks out there and nobody had really planted them this far north yet.
Those sticks grew, and the Berchams, who are now in their 50s and 60s, have 18,332 pistachio trees.
They take 7 years for the first harvest, and so he was able to see the second harvest.
Pistachio trees can live more than a century, which Clisha says was part of the thinking when her father started the orchard as an investment for his grandchildren. Outside, the pistachio trees are planted in neat rows, stretching into the distance, over 114 acres.
These are the trees, the wonderful trees that we're growing.
Most are female, with the occasional male sprinkled throughout.
All they have to do is the pollination.
Pretty much.
And then the girls just kind of take care of all the rest.
They're laughing now, but last year was not a good one for the Berchams. They harvested the usual way, shaking the trees with a machine to get ripe pistachios, Stephen calls them diamonds, which grow in clusters and turn a blush pink when they're ready.
You'll do your first shake. You'll do it for about 3 seconds because you only want to get the diamonds off. And then you come back with a second shake.
Stephen points to the baby pistachios that need another season.
This is my crop for next year. This is already on the tree. So if I shake the L out of it.
Keep shaking it.
You're going to wind up dropping this.
But many of the pistachio hulls, which encase the entire nut in its shell, were different last year.
They were stuck on the tree. So, I mean, they were there. You just couldn't.
And that never happened before.
Never.
The Bertrams ended up bringing in just half of their usual production and revenue, estimating they lost $400,000 on last year's crop. They even took out a crop loan for the first time. It's still not clear to them what happened, but they suspect last year's fluctuating temperatures.
We would have really warm weather for a week, and then we would have really cold weather.
Pistachios need that cold weather, consistently at night. Water is another perennial concern. Their ration from the local irrigation district was slashed.
We had a 35% cut overall from our original allotment, and I had to make up for that somehow.
They installed a new well 2 years ago, and this year got their full allotment of water thanks to lots of rain. Back at the house, Clisha Bertram says farming feels like rolling the dice.
You don't see a whole bunch of us in Vegas and Tahoe, but we gamble every year because we have no idea what our price is going to be and we have no idea what our crop's going to be.
The Bertrams are also struggling with higher costs for fertilizer and labor and are talking about how much longer they can hold on.
As much as we hate that conversation, but it is a reality.
Stephen says running the orchard was a commitment he made to his father-in-law.
I took it over on a promise. A promise that I would make it everything that he wanted. So far, I have done that. And I plan to do as he wanted me to, and that's transferring it on to my kids.
The Bertrams are hopeful about production this year, but won't know for sure until the harvest starts in September. In Fireball, California, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Topic du jour in the bottom half of the program today is the economics of food. Pistachios a minute ago, the challenges of climate change, obviously, and now from our series My Economy, a food truck loaded with frozen yogurt.
My name is Debbie Grimes, and I'm the co-owner of Tuk Tuk Yum Yum Sweet Treats. We are a dessert catering company based in Reno, Lake Tahoe area, Nevada. And we specialize in frozen yogurt served on the go in our Piaggio Ape tuk-tuk. So we use another company's base and then make all of our own flavors from there. For us, we can't often meet the minimum purchasing requirements for bulk ordering through a distributor. So we are paying retail prices sometimes, and it's gone up between 12 to 15% on our costs right now. Everyone's favorite flavor is vanilla. I have to have vanilla on the truck. And we always have a dairy-free option on our truck because oftentimes, even in our own family with my daughter, she can't have dairy. And nothing sucks more than leaving an ice cream shop because your kid can't have something. So I think our most expensive cost, honestly, is actually vending fees. So we participate in a weekly event that costs us about $60 to participate in that we think's lovely. We love being a part of it. It's a local farmers market in the area. Some of the bigger events coming up here with one of our bigger promoters, which is like $300. And then last year we participated in like a really big event that was like 10,000 people. And that one was upwards to $1,000 to participate in. So those are a big upfront cost for us, and we don't know how the event's going to do. Most of them are rain or shine here, but based on what the weather decides to do, based on a change in environment, you know, that changes it for us, so there's a lot of risk there. You know, Tuk Tuk Yum Yum came about because we wanted frozen yogurt on a really hot day walking around at a Nevada event. But the actual start of it really came after being tired from the weight of the pandemic's restrictions. We missed the autonomy of running our own lives. And so we wanted to move away from traditional work and reshape our own economy. And you know, try the radical idea of actually enjoying your work again.
Debbie Grimes, the proprietor of Tuk Tuk Yum Yum Sweet Treats Food Truck. She is in Reno, Nevada. No matter where you are, let us know what you're up to. Marketplace.org/myeconomy. Final note on the way out. Saw this yesterday, but we already had a Target story in the show, and it's only a half an hour. The company said in its earnings call on Wednesday morning that it's expecting organized retail crime to rise by $500 million this year. Not totaling $500 million, but an additional $500 million of theft on top of the $750 million or so it lost last year to what is called shrink in the trade. So in all, more than $1 billion worth of organized shoplifting. All right, we're leaving. Here, though, is your very quick moment of economic context. Equities might not be worried about the debt limit, but you know who is? Bond traders, that who. The yield, that is the interest rate, on a one-month treasury at the end of April, 4.35%. Today, 5.4%. Debt limit brinksmanship is not cheap, people. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.